It's Monday, September 16th, 2013, and welcome to episode 155 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
And I'm Cindy Rich.
I'm Mike Joya.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. We're back to two episodes a month, so welcome everybody to episode 155. And this time, we've got one major segment for you. We're going to be talking, Mike, you're going to talk a little bit about passwords. So just say
my favorite topic.
Keeping us safe, keeping us in line.
Yeah, safe and secure.
Stay safe.
And then we'll follow that up with our technology picks of the week. I think I'm going to have, I'll choose an assistive technology app this week.
Very good. I'm picking something that's near and dear to teachers' hearts right now as we're all talking about Common Core state standards.
Okay.
And I'm going to continue on with yours, Tom, and more about some assistive technology.
Okay. So here we go. Up first today, we have our security spotlight, and we have Mike Joya with us from our ITS department. Last time we talked about our technology troubleshooting type things of going back to school. And we mentioned, you know, something about passwords, but I thought this would be a real good time, you know, this first month back to school, to talk about the importance of passwords and, you know, why we need to make them a little bit more complex. So, Mike, what do you have here to share with us today?
Well, most people don't realize is there's a hacking technique called brute force, and it's when you use a computer to go through every password combination feasible. And you'd be surprised that with simple combinations like just numbers, how fast a computer can crank through a password. Your typical password, say it was nine numbers. Most people don't use numbers, but let's say nine numbers. And a typical little older dual-core processor computer can crack through a password like that in 1.5 minutes.
Wow.
So, a supercomputer, if you were running up maybe at U of I or something, it'd be instant. Like, mm-hmm. You'd find it instantly. Adding, some things that adding most places, well, it's hard to determine what most places is their policy for passwords, because we'll get into that, how that's not very well standardized. But here at Eastern, we say around, the requirement, I think, is 12 characters. And we use special characters. But if you're just using capital letters and lowercase letters, and if you're using a standard computer, a single core computer, it takes 3,026 years to crack that password on that computer. So on top of that, adding special characters and not using words from the dictionary, it just extends it out.
Yeah.
Because some of them won't accept it if it's a word.
Right.
At all.
Right. And I think ours is, we can use words, but you have to have a special character, certain special characters, numbers, lowercase, uppercase letters.
Yeah, lowercase, uppercase.
Ours is pretty good. But, you showed me an article here about some of the cloud services, and I was just, as a security person, shocked. Let's just say shocked by how lax the password requirements were.
Right. As you say, there's no standards out there. And, last time we talked about Dropbox a little bit. I don't know what their password requirements, but there's all of these, they're great, wonderful free services, but we really need, to be safe and practice, good security out there, because that's your information, as we talked about last time, putting out not only your information, but possibly, in our case, our students and things like that. Mm-hmm. So we really, we really need to pay attention how to keep that. Now, going back to the length, what we're talking about is there's an algorithm, a mathematical calculation, the permutations, how many different possibilities, how many different characters and things. So obviously the longer the password, the more secure, but also the complexity. So that's where your uppercase, the lowercase, and not so long ago, I've heard the term dictionary attacks forever, because people use common words out there. And if you're using something like that and running through, like Merriam-Webster's dictionary or something, if that's your, your password philosophy or whatever, it's very easy to do. It'll happen very quick.
And, back to the uppercase and lowercase combinations, and at 12, there's 95 quadrillion. I've seen that even being an engineer background. Quadrillion.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's above trillion for combinations. And, you know, and don't be deceived. It's like, okay, well, why don't we just have password requirements of being like 26 characters? Mm-hmm. Well, computers, again, it's all math. So they would take, in computers, everything's broken up into eights for the most part. They would just take anything from 16 and over. They would just break it into two separate mm-hmm. passwords and run the process through. So that's how that would work. And so... You know, usually about you're not really gaining anything for anything over 16 characters for time.
This makes me think about one time we had one of our credit card numbers stolen, and somebody used it, and we were like, "How the heck did they get it?" And they were like, "No, there are professionals that have computers that just run the numbers and the back the code and zips and when they hit, you know, it's boom."
Yeah, and that's why there's hackers when it comes to like spear phishing. You're like, well, I'm sitting here at a university. I don't really have anything important, but, you know, my account got compromised and I was spamming out all this junk. It was just junk. Mm-hmm. But hackers get money for giving someone else that's running all the spam processes the hacked accounts that, with the passwords and everything, so that they can set up these little bots to just spam out all this junk, which is usually either, you know, buy this or that you won the lottery in the UK, which I still don't think the UK has a lottery. I don't think they do.
You know, Nigeria does.
So they say. I've won that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, you have to be careful of all the scams and things out there.
Yeah. And like I said, this one article you showed me, it was just, you know, there's only out of the 130 cloud services, which is the new buzzword cloud, which is just, you know, hosted solutions that you can access anywhere. There's only one service that actually forced its users to have a really strong password, and that was 8 characters, letters, numbers, and special characters, include ampersand, pound, dollar sign, percent, caret. Yeah,
I would say that's probably about the minimum, you know, in today's world.
Yeah, looking at this, there was 48 services that had 6 characters. Any characters. So you could just put in 6 ones or 6 zeros or the password and you'd be fine. And then there was there's 31 services that required a single character.
So what?
That's the one that just...
31 services. So
A, it, B,
right.
C.
Right.
Holy cow.
I mean, you could do that in 3 minutes. Yeah, it's just a human. You don't need any keyboard. Computing power for that.
Right.
It's surprising. But that gets back to the whole security and in my job, the riskiest part is the end user. You know, the user is the weakest link in the whole chain now. I mean, and that paradigm has shifted probably like 5-6 years ago when it was hackers were just out there to cause chaos and send out viruses. Now all of it starts with spear phishing, you know, some type of social engineering technique to get initial access. And you can see that too with a lot of the vulnerabilities, is these vulnerabilities only happen if the hacker has access to the system to begin with before they can even exploit that vulnerability.
Right. Tying this to something that just happened this week in the news, Apple had their event for the new iPhones, and they built in the fingerprint reader. Mm-hmm. So kind of like to get your take on that.
Well, when I first saw that, I was sitting there, you know, watching the live cast. I can't remember if I was on Computer World or what, with all their tweeting
and live blogging.
Yeah, live blogging. And I saw that, and they said that you can buy apps and stuff from the iTunes store just using clicking your fingerprint, there was no need for a password. And then I'm like, oh, so some random stranger in Australia has my fingerprint, you know. But that's not, they later clarified that in the live in the event, that the fingerprint was only going to be stored on the device and in a secure section of the processor, which is nice. And they also had a little like panic room area on your iPhone, basically, where you could store ultra sensitive stuff that can only be accessed by your fingerprint.
Well, that was kind of like your Tech Pick, your Keeper app,
right?
To use something like that. My question was, I mean, in my family, you know, we share phones back and forth. So
can you use a password also?
Yeah, I would surely think.
I'm sure they would.
You know, PCs have had fingerprint readers for years out there, and whenever we set them up, you know, you can do a swipe with your finger, mm-hmm. but you also provide an alternative traditional password,
right.
in case that sensor, that biometric sensor, something goes awry with
it. Well, and the just using a passcode has still got to be in there in the iOS 7 because the 5Cs don't have the fingerprint reader. It's just in the 5S.
Yeah. Mm. The other big item in the news we talked about before on this show is the two-factor authentication that, you know, as you say, we're only as good as that weakest link out there. So as the technology improves, as, you know, these biometric devices, these fingerprint readers, you know, you were in the military, the retina scans and all the other fancy sci-fi things that are probably out there. But, you know, that's, you know, that two-factor is something, you know, something that's on you, you know, like a key or something like that.
Right. Yeah, and I've seen a lot of the token two-factor authentication where it's a random generating tokens mm-hmm. on, like, your keychain. Well, and when I generate certificates for servers, I have the app that lets me do that, or the program. It's online, but I also have a token on my phone, and mm-hmm. that has a pin I have to put in just to get to the token part, let alone that then I got to put the token in on the website. Yeah.
Seems like it gets complicated real quick on doing that, but it's necessary.
It's necessary. And to me, I'm kind of used to it because, like, I was in the military and we did a lot of two-factor authentication. Like, just to access our computers, we had to use our ID, slide it into a common access card reader, and then type in a pin, you know. Yeah. But you didn't want to lose your ID because that chip and, you know, had a lot of important information on it.
Yes.
Also, you know, I noticed, or they said on the Today Show that it would not read fingerprints from dead fingers.
Yeah.
So if somebody chopped your finger off, they couldn't use it.
Don't get any ideas out of it.
But I'm like, oh, boy, that was loud, sorry. But I thought, okay, what about, like, burns and things like that?
Well, I mean, that's just what makes your fingerprint unique. Like my one thumb, I have a scar going right down through it. My thumbprint
is
really unique compared to my other thumbprint.
Yeah.
But the only other lapses is identical twins have the same fingerprints.
Really?
Yes. Hmm. So that's the one loophole. But, you know, it's not like you can plan that.
Right.
Right. So,
yeah,
they had the same fingerprints.
But what if you cut it now the other way and it changed your fingerprint?
I don't know. I don't know if you can reset it.
Update your fingerprint?
Yeah.
Time to buy a new phone.
Exactly.
They got it figured out. So, okay. Well, I'll provide a link in the show notes about the complexity and things. But, you know, kind of the general idea out there is, you know, be careful. Make those passwords unique. Make them complex. And that protects you. And then the final thing is change them occasionally.
Right. And what we tell our users here at the university is that to make sure that your password is difficult for someone to guess, but easy for you to remember. Because, again, on top of that, you're not supposed to write it down. You make a super hard password.
That's what happens.
And then you write it down.
Notes.
Yeah, you write it down on your desk, and you're sitting there, and then someone just comes by and is like, oh, there's your password, and just gets right in. And
defeats the whole purpose of doing it.
Might as well just not even have one.
Yeah, so. Okay, well, thank you. My technology pick of the week this week is an assistive technology app. Someone asked me earlier this week, we had some students that were needing some assistance with reading some directions and some text. And probably not many people know, but within Microsoft Word, there's actually a text-to-speech program, and it's very easy to enable. So I'll provide links out there in the show notes, but I'm just going to talk this through. I know this is an audio podcast, but you can go to the link in the show notes. There is a quick access toolbar in the title bar of Microsoft Word, and if you click on that and scroll down to More Commands, that will take you to a window that says Word Options, and you can choose Commands, and it says Popular Commands. If you click on that little triangle link, there'll be additional choices. And I want to go down and say, show me all the commands that are available to me in Microsoft Word. Mm-hmm. So I do that. It gives me all the list of commands. I'm looking for one specific one, and it's called Speak. So this is all alphabetical. So I will scroll down to S-P-E-A-K. Take me just a second because this is quite an extensive link. And then I can click Add. Once I do that, I will have a little speech bubble appear at the top of my Word document. So no matter what text I have inside my Word document, I can highlight it and click on that little speech bubble. And I think I've got my tablet plugged in here to the mixer. So let's see if we can listen to this. You guys tell me if you can hear this.
Okay.
I'm just going to highlight it. I'm highlighting the words. There's two or three paragraphs here, and then I'm going to hit speak.
Day 30, creating screencasts and flipping the classroom with the Surface RT. 30 days with a Surface RT for teachers. Teaching and learning with a Windows 8 tablet. Well, we made it.
Okay. So
Day 30.
There we go. I stopped right there. So it reads what you have highlighted. So if you have some learners out there that need just a little bit of help, with reading something, this makes a very easy to use application, and it's free. If you have Microsoft Word, it's just an option that you can enable, and that's one of the assistive technologies available. We probably need someday to do a show just on some assistive technologies out there, some kind of hints and tips out there for using some of that, because there's a lot available now.
Then could you record that audio coming out of that?
The reverse process going through speech and have it go to text?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Well, no. No, I'm just talking about saving that so you can listen to it again later or again, but not have to open the document.
You would have to some type of digital audio recorder to record, because I just played that through our mixer. So, yeah, it would be possible.
Okay.
Low-tech way of doing it, if you had a set of speakers, and a lot of our students do have, like, those little Sony digital recorder, like $40-$50 now. They're a very reasonable price. You can just hold that up to your speakers,
Cool.
For studying and things, a lot of people, if you're – if you prefer audio, you're an auditory, recording some of those notes or even as a study aid, just talking into your recorder and then playing back and listening. It's just, some of that repetition and things and the different methods, modalities that we can get to.
Yeah, very cool.
So that's the little speak option in Word. Okay, Cindy, what do you have?
Well, one of the things, actually, I just discovered something else as I was playing with my phone here, and that I had never tried the Quick Office.
Mm-hmm.
App, or is that an app?
Yep, and this is on Android.
Right, on my Android. And so I was playing with that while I was also listening to you diligently. And that. But I'm going to have to play with that a little more, because I didn't realize you could create new Word documents and I think PowerPoint and stuff,
compatible.
Too.
It's not the true version, Microsoft version, but it's a compatible version.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to play with that a little bit.
Yeah, I have that on my old Asus Transformer, so I've used that quite a bit.
Well, now I feel old-fashioned, so delete that part.
No.
Anyway, the app we were going to talk about a little bit is just something that I'm hearing teachers talking more and more about, and it's the whole Common Core implementation in schools.
The Common Core standards.
Right. And so one of the things is just having easy access to them. And a lot of teachers are getting, there's an app for Common Core standards that's really well developed. It's Common Core by Mastery Connect. Now, when I went to their website, it's actually a group you have to become a member of and share.
To sign up for.
And it's sharing teacher resources and things like that. And I tried to sign in, and it wouldn't accept me from the university. So apparently you need to be a K-12 educator to get in and that. So I'm not 100% how that works, but the site is very different than the app. The app is very just information-based, but it's a cool little quick way to get access to the standards, look at them by grade level or however you want to search them.
Kind of like a little database app that you can say if you're looking for 8th grade social studies.
Right, right.
It drills down exactly to those standards.
And so sometimes I think, there are different apps out there, because I know even I was over at Home Depot doing something. I downloaded the Home Depot app thinking it would maybe have things to help me figure out how much carpet I needed to order. Well, it really is just a catalog pretty much online. And that's cool too. But, so if you know what it is, I guess that's key. And really checking out the apps is the only way you're going to do it. The websites, I think, are always going to be a lot more information.
Yeah, and a little bit more broad-based, because, we're dealing with, I'm sure, they have an app for the iTunes Store, too, I'm sure, for the Apple and Android. I'm not sure about Windows Store or Windows Phone out there. And then Google Play, which I guess would be your Android. So.
Yep. So that's my app for today.
Okay. Mike.
Okay, I'm going to kind of go along with yours with the assisted speaking help with the Windows 8, but mine is more on for people who have like poor functionality. We have all these touch devices now where you don't have to actually physically press a button anymore. And so you just need to tap something on the screen. And like I found this on the iPhone, there's the assisted app that lets you do a lot of functions that the physical buttons do. Mm-hmm. You can do it on the screen. And I found this through on my own because I have a 4S and my home button or my screen lock button broke, my volume up button broke, and I didn't want to pay the extra money for a new phone when I knew the iPhone 5S was coming out in like a couple months.
Right.
So I found this, and you know, it lets me do lock screen, and so all the buttons I would normally have to press, I don't have to. And there's a whole bunch of features in here that you can do. Three buttons will light up the screen, and things like that. So it's very helpful. And then I did some more research on apps because I was thinking about people that have more problems or wheelchair bound and stuff that they can do
or fine motor control,
right? And you know, so some people, like even the ability to change the channel on a regular TV remote, mm-hmm. is hard for them. Mm-hmm. Like they can't do it, where now there's apps for universal remotes. You can program your iPhone to send a signal, RF signal, to change the channel, and so people can just touch and do things. And then the other big thing is there's a lot of like panic apps out there where you don't even have to pay a service unless you're going to extensively use it for multiple people, but you press a button and it sends text messages to 2, 3, 4 people saying,
mm-hmm. I need help.
Assistance. I need help. Yeah. I'm in emergency. And I think actually Eastern here is developing an app for that with the police station that they can press a button and it sends it's like a panic alert and it goes to the police officers so that they can respond to where it's at. Because now all of our phones are GPS synced and mm-hmm. The satellites are tracking us.
Right.
With the NSA and everything, but
conspiracy theories,
right? Again. But you know, it's pretty interesting when you can find out there now. And I know, taking some classes when I was taking technology classes here for my master's, we were talking about some emerging technologies, and then there's the eye recognition and head recognition cameras, a lot like Kinect is for your Xbox, mm-hmm. but where you can look up or down and it sends a command to your TV to change the channel or mm-hmm. or left or right. And and that stuff's coming from the military age because a lot of the new advanced aircraft actually have these halo helmets.
That look like heads-up displays.
Yeah, that are in the helmet, and it's tracking your eyesight. So you can just look at something, and your target tracker like locks onto, mm-hmm. As opposed to using your hands like mm-hmm. in Top Gun back in the day. Mm-hmm. Like you just look, and the target locks on, and your missile fires. Yeah. So,
wink.
But, that type of stuff is coming into what we can use at home.
Yeah, consumer now. Level technologies, yeah.
And there's a lot of hacks, personal hacks with Kinect and the Nintendo Wii of using to help them with assisted mm-hmm. Technologies throughout the house.
Yeah, I think maybe we can look at this a little bit more. We have some experts here on campus that I go to, whenever we need assistance with some of that. But with the touchscreens, when they first, and it's like any other technology, we want to build in that accessibility piece to it, but the new technology sometimes forgets about that. But one of the advantages of the touchscreen, with the soft buttons and things, or software, so you can do anything that you want, unlike that physical button. Once you make a physical form, you're stuck with that format.
Right, and you can program your iPhone to do, if you do special motions on your screen,
gestures,
that it represents a certain action, mm-hmm. Like going back to your home screen or something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this saved, just finding that saved me a
segment. Yeah. So, okay, thank you very much. That wraps it up for episode 155 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
I'm Cindy Rich.
I'm Mike Joya.
Keep on learning.